I want to begin in volume 5, and we begin with March the 19th, 1903. True love is that of one who, in suffering for God, wants to suffer more. This morning I saw the confessor all humiliated, Louisa said, and also Blessed Jesus and Saint Joseph who were with him. Get down to work, for the Lord is ready to give you the grace you want. After this, on seeing my dear Jesus suffering in the course of his passion, I said to him, Lord, did you not feel tiredness in suffering so many pains? And he said, no. On the contrary, one suffering would ignite the heart more to suffer another one. These are the ways of divine suffering. Not only this, but in suffering and in working or operating, it looks at nothing but the fruit it receives from it. Okay, that's Hebrews 12 too. For the joy that was set before him, he endured the cross, despising the shame of it. That does not mean you enjoy suffering, but it means that you are looking at what the suffering is going to do, what it is going to achieve. And because of what it's going to achieve, you are prepared to pay the price, and you do it out of love for God and for humanity. So Jesus continues, in my wounds and in my blood, I saw nations saved. So he kept his eyes on that. And I also saw the good that creatures would receive. And in my heart, instead of feeling tiredness, I felt joy and an ardent desire to suffer more, because he was prepared to pay any price in order to save us. So this is the sign that what one suffers is participation in my pains, that there is suffering united with joy to suffer more. And in operating, one operates for me. That means out of love for Jesus, that one does not look at what he does, but at the glory he gives to God and the fruit that he receives. Now, this is very high sanctity, but it is where Louisa is being called to. So March the 20th, 1903. Jesus and Saint Joseph console the priest in his difficulties. As I was outside of myself, Louisa said, I saw the priest all in difficulty with regard to the grace that he wants. And once again, Blessed Jesus and Saint Joseph, very interesting, were saying to him, if you get down to work, all your difficulties will disappear and will fall off like fish scales. In other words, your problem is that you're dithering and you're thinking too much about it and you're rationalizing about it. Why don't you go forward trusting God beyond reason and you'll see what God can do? So March the 23rd, 1903. If a love is holy, it forms the life of sanctification. If it is perverted, it forms the life of condemnation. So Louisa said, as I was in my usual state after much struggling, for just a little I saw my adorable Jesus in my arms and a light coming out of his forehead. Now the forehead is the place where everybody thinks the soul is behind that, the intelligence is behind it, and therefore the soul. But of course the soul inhabits your whole being. And she saw a light. So from within this light, these words were written, love is everything for God and for man. Now, you're going to hear this message over and over and over until you are completely convinced. First of all, I want to give you John 8:12 and John 9:2, that Jesus is the light of the world. And I want to give you 1 John 4:7, that God is love, and therefore, naturally, love is everything for him. However, there are two species of love, one spiritual and divine, and the other is corporal and disordered. So it's the difference between agape love. Agape is the Greek word, the spiritual divine love, and just ordinary human passions and feelings. So there is a great difference between these two loves in intensity, multiplicity, and diversity. One could say that there is almost a difference which exists between the thinking of the mind and the operating of the hands. In a very short time, the mind can think of 100 things, while the hands can only perform one thing at a time. God is the creator, and if he creates the creatures, it is love alone that makes him create. That's Psalm 145, verse 17. God only ever acts out of love. So if he creates human beings, he does it out of love. If he keeps all his ambitions in continuous attitude towards attributes, sorry, if he keeps all his attributes in continuous attitude or openness towards his creatures, it is love that pushes him to do it, because God is love, 1 John 4:7. And his very attributes receive life from love. In other words, love is the very center of God. It's his nature, it's his being. So all his attributes are naturally enough centered in love. But of course, the same applies to disordered love, like the love of riches and the love of pleasures and many other things. These are not the things that form the life of human beings. But man feels love for these things. And not only do they form his life, but he reaches the point of making them his own idol. Luke 12:20. We can make anything into an idol. So if the love is holy, it will form the life of sanctification in us. And if love is disordered, it leads us in the opposite direction. So March 24th, 1903. Though being nothing, one can be everything while being with Jesus. Now, we come across this message over and over and over again in these writings, that of ourselves we are nothing, but that we can become something in him. So I want to give you the two texts that you will hear over and over and over again in these, and that is John 15:5, without me you can do nothing, and Philippians 4:13, I can do all things in Christ who gives me the strength. So outside of him, nothing, certainly nothing good, and in him, I can do whatever God asks me to do. And that's because God is our strength, God is our light, God is our fortitude, God is everything. So Louisa says, this morning, after I had gone through most bitter days, blessed Jesus came and spent time with me intimately, so much so that I thought I would possess him forever. This is one of the strange things about the spiritual life, that if you're going through a good time, as Louisa is at this moment, you'll think it's going to last forever. And if you're also going through an arid or difficult time, you also think that's going to last forever. It's a strange thing. Spiritually, we don't remember and get strength from previous experience. I thought I would possess him forever, but all of a sudden he disappeared like a flash. Who can say my pain? I felt I was going insane. More so since I was almost sure that I was not going to lose him anymore. Now notice the almost in the sure. Now, while I was being consumed with pain, he came back like a flash, and with sonorous and serious voice, he said, "Who are you to expect to be always with me? Have you no idea who you are? We are, after all, dust that he has put the breath of being into." And Louisa, she says, insane as she was, daringly answered him, "I am everything while being with you. I feel I am nothing but a will that has come out of the womb of my creator. And as long as this will is united with you, it feels life, existence, peace, and all of its good. But without you, I feel myself without life. I feel I'm being destroyed. I feel dispersed. I feel restless. I say that I experience all evils, and in order to have life, and so that I may not be dispersed, this will that came out from you looks for your womb, your center, and there it wants to remain forever. Jesus seemed to be all moved, and then he repeated again, but who are you? Now, first of all, Louisa has given an absolutely inspired answer. I am a will that has come out of the very womb of the Trinity. And this will of mine will never, ever be at peace or happy unless it goes back to the womb of the Creator where it came from. And it can only live, it can only exist, it can only thrive if the life of my Creator makes it alive. Therefore, my will must be lost in the will of God. It must go back to its center. So that first piece of information is absolutely fantastic. The second thing is that Jesus says, but who are you? And Louisa answers correctly, I am nothing. I'm nothing but a drop of water. And as long as this drop of water is in your sea, okay, in your sea, it seems to it that it is the whole sea. If it does not go out of the sea, it remains clean and clear in such a way as to be able to stand the comparison of other waters. But if it goes out of the sea, it will become muddy. And because of its littleness, it will be dispersed. All moved, he bent down towards me and embracing me, told me, my daughter, one who wants to be always in my will keeps my very person within himself. So when Louisa answered the question, who am I? She compared herself to a drop of water if it is put into the ocean. A drop of water by itself can dry up and be dispersed very, very easily. But if you put that drop of water in the mighty ocean, you won't find it because it has gone back to its source, which is in the waters. And therefore, it is completely safe. We can't take a tissue to the mighty oceans, go looking for a drop of water. That's not possible. So what Jesus is doing is drawing out of her the desire to be in the divine will. Now, don't forget that Louisa is the very first person in human history after Blessed Mother to come into the divine will. She's the first person who was born with original sin to come into the divine will. So Jesus is taking her step by step and teaching her sip by sip. So he said, one who wants to be always in my will keeps my very person within herself. So if my will is locked into the divine will, naturally God is with me because the divine will is the essence of God. And even if he can go out of my will, since I created his will free, my power operates a prodigy by administering to him continuously the participation in the divine life. And so the incredible thing is, you know, we put ourselves into the divine will. And even though we have to go on with our daily duties and chores, because we want to continuously be in the divine will, he's going to work the prodigy of enabling that to happen against all our weaknesses, which is incredible. And I mean incredible in the sense of marvelous, because of this participation the soul receives, he feels such strength and attraction of union with my divine will that even if he wanted to go out of it, he couldn't do it because you feel just so attracted to the source. That's like saying if a magnet finds the other magnet, it's so attracted to it, you're going to have to use real force to separate them. He said, this is the continuous power that comes out of me towards one who always does my will, about which I spoke to you the other day. So you have to go back to volume 2. So that's a very important step into entering into the divine will. So it mightn't be any harm to give yourself a heading for this, the steps of entering into the divine will. Write it at the top of your page. So April the 7th, 1903, Louisa doubts about her state of victim. Now, in the first four volumes, particularly, Louisa goes over this territory time and time and time again. And it may be a little bit boring for us who are reading it, but it was extremely important for her to make absolutely certain that what was happening within her was in fact coming from God and that she wasn't being deceived. So her continuous discernment is actually very important. After going through most bitter days because of the continuous privations of my adorable Jesus, this morning I felt I had reached the summit of affliction. And tired and exhausted, I was thinking that Jesus really didn't want me in this state anymore. And I almost decided, notice the almost, decided to go out of it. While I was doing this, my adorable Jesus moved in my interior and made himself heard praying for me. She needed help. And Jesus is the great intercessor of the human race. He's the one who interceded for everything for us. We owe everything to his intercession. And it must be a most incredible experience to actually hear Jesus interceding for us. It must be very humbling as well. So I want to give you for that Hebrews 11:25, that now that he's in heaven, he is living ever to make intercession for us. I could only understand that he was imploring the power, the strength and the providence of God for me. That's Romans 8:26, for those who love God, everything is given for their needs. And he was saying, don't you see, O Father, that she has greater need of help and that she wants to render herself a sinner by going out of our will? Now, sin actually means going out of the divine will. After so many graces, he said. And here we have Louisa, who's at a very high stage in holiness. But it's just as easy to fall from a high mountain as from a low one. And those of us who are much closer to the ground know that even a fall close to the ground can actually break your leg. From a high mountain, it can kill. So that's why he says she wants to render herself a sinner by going out of my will. Now, going out of his will meant that Louisa is tempted to go out of her state of victim. She has been called to be a victim soul. And she will be told in higher volumes, I think it's in volume 6, that the whole of Europe and the church are leaning on her. And if she doesn't do the reparation that is required for the church and for Europe, that things are going to be an awful lot worse than they might be. But she keeps on being tempted to go out because she has this notion at the early stages that if she's not suffering 24/7, 365, that she shouldn't be in the bed, that there was no function of her being there. And it's going to take her quite some time to realise that the Lord knows exactly what he's doing and that he has her in that bed to have her full and complete, undistracted, undiverted attention. Okay, so Jesus is praying because of her temptation. Who can say how I felt my heart split on hearing these words of Jesus? And then he came out from within my interior. You see, God is with you anyway. If you're in grace, you have the indwelling of the Blessed Trinity in your soul. The only way you can get rid of that is by committing serious mortal sin, vile stuff. Okay. So he came out from within my interior. And after, you can also put Luke 17:21, the kingdom of God is within you. Okay. So he came out from within my interior. And after I made sure that it was blessed Jesus, I said, Lord, is it your will that I continue to remain in this state of victim? Because not feeling myself in the same position as before, I see myself as if the coming of the priest is no longer necessary. Now, Louisa's thorn in her side is the coming of the priest. And we're going to be dealing with this for a number of volumes. The strange thing is, Louisa was willing to take the crown of thorns. She was willing to be crucified. But she wasn't willing to have this priest come every single day. That's the thorn in her side. And the amazing thing is that we might say we have a cross in our lives, but the cross is the one thing you cannot tolerate. You'd give it to anybody, anytime, anywhere, under any conditions, because it's really, really getting to you. The thing that's getting to her is the priest coming every single day. And so when she takes the crown of thorns and the crucifixion and everything, that's not her cross. Her cross is that she's sitting there in the bed, apparently doing nothing. And this priest has to come and attend her every day. And she finds it very humiliating. And so she will ask the Lord over and over again to remove this. But you need to put 2 Corinthians 12:9 there, because the Lord... St. Paul asked that the thorn in his side would be removed. He only asked 3 times. Louisa asked him many times. And Jesus said, no, my grace is sufficient for you. My power is at best in weakness. So so she asked that the priest no longer come. And if for nothing else, she said, I would spare the confessor the sacrifice. And Jesus said, for now, it is not my will that you go out of this state. And as for the sacrifice of the priest, I will render back to him the charity he does increased 100-fold. So these words are said to Louisa, but she's not going to register them. She's like the rest of us insofar as if it is something you really are worried about, you may have to be told 10 times before you actually hear in the depths of your being. So she will come back to this point many times. And Jesus tells her not to worry about the priest, that if he really does this out of love for God, that he will be rewarded 100-fold, as Jesus promised in the gospel. Then all afflicted, Jesus added, my daughter, the socialists have plotted among themselves to strike the church. This is 1903. And these socialists are what we call communists, atheists, atheistic Marxism, which was about to absolutely flood the church in the early part of the 20th century. And to understand why God allowed that, you need to remember the vision of Pope Leo XIII, when he heard a conversation between Satan and Jesus, in which Satan asked for a century to destroy the church. And the amazing thing is he was given permission, because this was meant to be a test to sift the church, to find out how much real reality was there. So that century was the 20th century. And the attack that Satan sent to the church was through communism, atheistic Marxism, rationalism, modernism, and lots of other stuff. So that's what is given under the word socialists right now. Because in the beginning, nobody really knew what they were being attacked with. It's just in hindsight that we can name it very clearly. So the socialists are plotting among themselves to strike the church. This they've done publicly in France. Now, the atheistic materialism was launched on the world by the French Revolution, when they declared that it was the age of reason and you didn't need faith anymore. Now, the extraordinary thing is that France is the eldest daughter of the church. So it means that this is a major, major, major attack on the church. And looking back on it a century later, more than a century later, we can see that our theologians, our scripture scholars were all affected by this thinking. And it has done frightful damage to the church. So this was done publicly in France and in Italy in a more hidden way. Now, if the evil is hidden, it comes under the subject of the mystery of iniquity, which St. Paul speaks about in 2 Thessalonians 2:7. He says that the evil that will destroy the church or try to destroy it will be hidden at first, and then it'll come out in the open. So I want to give you Amos 3:7 there. The Lord never does anything without telling the prophets first. Okay. So I want to now give you April the 10th, 1903. Since men do not surrender, that's human beings, Jesus will play the trumpet of new and grave scourges. Now, the words are used in these writings in the same way as they're used in the scriptures. So trumpet means the shofar, S-H-O-F-A-R in phonetics. And the shofar is the ram's horn. And the ram's horn was used to warn the people of dangers. Okay, so Jesus would play the ram's horn because he's the shepherd, you see. And he would play, the shepherds would play the ram's horn to warn the sheep of dangers. And the sheep understood the sound, the wailing sound of the ram's horn. So Louisa said, as I was in my usual state, I saw our Lord with a rod in his hand with which he touched the people. Now, if you go to Revelation 2:9 and Revelation 19, you will be told that Jesus will rule with a rod of iron. Now, that rod of iron is actually the Ten Commandments. Our society today has moved away from God, away from Christ, and away from the commandments. And they think that God's will should change to suit them. They think that commandments should be put aside to suit them. That is not so. And when the judgment comes, they will be judged on the very commandments they have rejected. So I want to give you John 5:45 as well, that Jesus is the one who will have the judgment. So Jesus is seen now with a rod of iron in his hands. And as they were touched, as the people were touched, they scattered and they rebelled. And the Lord said to them, I have touched you to reunite you around me. But instead of reuniting, you rebel and you scatter away from me. Therefore, it is necessary that I blow the trumpet or the shofar. So I want to give you Revelation 2:27. I want to give you Revelation 16:21, the second half of it, so B. Okay. And I want to give you Exodus 4:16. So Jesus said it's necessary to blow the trumpet. And while saying this, he began to blow the trumpet. I understood that the Lord had sent some chastisement and that human beings, instead of humbling themselves, now for that you need to go to Isaiah chapter 2. And at least four times, that's verse 9 and I think it's 12 or 17 and 21, Isaiah says that the pride of man must be brought low. Because if the pride of man is not brought low, God can never reign on the earth. The one who reigns through pride is Satan, not God. So if God is to reign, we have to get into our nothingness and acknowledge that he is everything and we're nothing. So instead of humbling themselves, we'll take the occasion to offend him and to move away from him. And on seeing this, the Lord will make the trumpet of more grave scourges resound. So why would human beings walk away from God with chastisement? It's because they are self-willed. And in their self-will, they rebel because they're not getting their own way. Now, if you've studied the Old Testament, the whole thing is one simple story about the rebellion of the human will against the divine will. And if you go to the Gospels, the whole story is that Jesus tried to Jesus made reparation for all the self-will and rebellious will of human race. And he died in order to combine the human will with the divine will. And the rest of the New Testament is the church trying to live the divine will as distinct from the human will. So there you have a summary of the Bible, and you see that the messages here are bringing it all to life. So April the 21st, 1903. Jesus suspends Louisa from her usual state so as to be able to chastise. Louisa says, I went through most bitter days of privations and of tears, with the addition of seeing myself about to be suspended by the Lord from the state of victim, as indeed happened. In fact, as much as I tried, I could not manage to lose consciousness. That means to go into ecstasy. Louisa will never use the term ecstasy. She'll only say I lost consciousness. Rather, I was surprised by so many pains in my bowels as to become restless, unable to make head or tail of anything. I only had a dream at night in which I seemed to see an angel who brought me inside a garden in which all the plants were blackened. That's not a good sign. But I didn't pay attention to this, she said. I could only think of how Jesus had driven me away from himself. Now, Louisa is very like Mary of Magdala on Easter Day. That's in John chapter 20, from verses 1 to 10. Mary was so intent on finding Jesus that when she saw two angels and they spoke to her, the only interest she had in them is, where's Jesus? It's very, very interesting. You also have that in the Song of Songs, when the bride loses her bridegroom and she searches everywhere for him. And when she meets the watchmen on the tower, she's no interest in them. She only wants to know, where is he? So this is Louisa right now. Later on, she said, the confessor came and, finding me inside of myself, he told me that the vineyards had frozen, which of course would destroy the fruit. I remained so very afflicted, thinking of the poor people and with the fear that he would not allow me to fall into my usual state so as to be able to chastise freely. Now, Louisa knows that if she isn't allowed to make reparation, that it's time for justice. And when the few times that Jesus actually suspends her means that no matter what she would do or what she would suffer, it wouldn't actually make any difference. And therefore, he's not going to put her through this agony for nothing. Now, what is happening in 1903 is the onslaught onto the world of Marxist communism and all the evils that went with it. So the Lord felt that it was not the moment for Louisa to make reparation for that, because it would have killed her. Of course, Louisa doesn't see it from that angle. So she continues. However, this morning, blessed Jesus came, making me fall into my usual state. And as soon as I saw him, I said to him, Ah, Lord, what about yesterday? What did you do? You made your bravado, she said. And besides, without even telling me anything, for at least I would have prayed you to hold back the chastisement in part. But that's precisely what he didn't want. And Jesus said, My daughter, it was necessary for me to suspend you, otherwise you would have prevented me and I would not have been free. Besides, how many times have I not done what you wanted? You see, Louisa is supposed to be giving her will to him. And when she does this reparation and suffering and all the rest of it, he actually does hers, partly. We find out in the higher volumes that at her very best, the Lord actually allows her one third, that's 33% off the chastisements, which means that her prayer was extremely powerful. Ah, my daughter, he said, it is necessary that scourges pour upon the world. Otherwise, in order to spare bodies, souls would be lost. Now, he's trying to tell her what the issue is. A soul is immortal. It's going to last forever. A body only has a certain length of time and the body will go back to the dust that it came from. So if the soul is going to be lost just to spare the body, that's not the right order. And so Jesus says he allows chastisements, which are a severe mercy, to try and save the soul for eternity. So having said this, he disappeared and I found myself outside of myself without my sweet Jesus. So I went around looking for him, and in the meantime, I saw a sun. You mean a great light. And God is light, 1 John 1:5. I saw a sun with a capital S in the vault of the heavens, which was different from the sun we see. That's a small s. And behind it, there was a multitude of saints. That's why I gave you 1 John 1:5. What she's seeing is the light of God. There was behind a multitude of saints who, in seeing the state of the world, its corruption, and how human beings make fun of God. Oops. Oh, dear. I want to give you Revelation 6, verses 9 to 10. All these saints cried out, "Revenge for your honor and for your glory. Make use of justice, for man no longer wants to recognize the rights of his creator." And then they were speaking in Latin, which of course was the official language of the church at the time. Only I could understand that this was the meaning. On hearing this, I trembled, Louisa said, and I felt my blood run cold, and I implored pity and mercy. So May the 8th, 1903, I have a VIP on this one. When man disposes himself to good, he receives good. And when he disposes himself to evil, he receives evil. This is one of the fundamental messages. So Louisa said, "I continue in my most bitter state of privation. At the most, Jesus makes himself seen taciturn." Now, whenever he's silent or taciturn, he's chastising. And he only comes for short instances because he doesn't want Louisa to block what he's doing. "This morning, since the confessor committed himself to making Jesus come, as I lost consciousness," that means went into ecstasy, "he made himself seen for a little and almost by force. And turning to the confessor with a serious and afflicted aspect, he said, 'What do you want?' The priest seemed to be confused and was unable to say anything. So I said, 'Lord, maybe it is that thing about the mass that he wants.' And the Lord said to him, 'Dispose yourself and you will have it.'" Now here you have received an immense revelation about everything. If you want something from God, dispose yourself. Open yourself up to it. And one of the things you have to do is put sin out of your life and choose the will of God. "Dispose yourself," he said, "and you will have it. Besides, you have the victim soul. And the closer you remain to her with your thought and with your intention, the stronger and freer you will feel to be able to do what you want." Now, this is a phenomenon that has happened frequently in the church, that when the Lord would raise up a soul to a great mission and a great sanctity, the priest who would do the spiritual direction for that person would participate in that mission. And the soul would actually make a saint out of the priest. Louisa had a number of spiritual directors, and one of them, Hannibal de Francia, is now a canonized saint, to make my point. But if you look at Francis of Assisi and Claire of Assisi, if you look at Francis de Sales and Jane de Chantal, just to give you one or two examples, but there are many. You have Teresa of Avila and John of the Cross, for example. There's lots of them. And so Jesus said, "Do you want to hear something? Hear it." At that moment, many cries of voices from all over the world could be heard. "Death to the Pope, destruction of religion, churches torn down, destruction of every dominion." Now, that was what was going to be unleashed on Russia first. And the destruction of the church in Russia was just unbelievable. It was horrendous. It was hellish. No one must exist above us. So this is the cry of the Marxist atheists. And Louisa is being allowed to hear it. I want you to put Isaiah 46:10 there. Again, that the Lord lets the prophets hear what's going on the earth so that they can deal with it somehow. And there were many other satanic voices, Louisa said, which it seems useless for me to repeat. Then the Lord added, "My daughter, When man disposes himself to good, he receives good. But if he disposes himself to evil, which is what you've just heard, the death of God and the death of religion and the death of the Pope and everything else. If he disposes himself to evil, evil will come. All these voices you hear reach my throne, he said. Not once, but many times. And when my justice sees that man not only wants evil, but he actually asks for it, with repeated petitions. With justice, the divine will is forced to concede it, to make them know the evil that they want. Now, make them know the evil means make them experience the evil that they want. Now, the 20th century was full of unbelievable evils. In fact, one can truly know evil only when one finds himself in it. So all of these people were crying out for the death of religion and the death of the Pope and the death of God and all the rest of it, thinking that they could run the universe by themselves. And only when they created hell on earth did they know what they had created. For example, when communism was finished in Russia, Russia was totally and incredibly destroyed spiritually, emotionally, and physically. And so Jesus said, this is the reason why my justice keeps looking for voids in order to punish man, to see would the chastisements would in any way turn them back to him. However, the time of your suspension has not yet come, at the most a few days now, so that the justice may press its hand down on man a little bit. For it can no longer bear the weight of such enormous evil. And at the same time, so as to make man's forehead raise too high, lower down. Now, man's forehead raised too high means pride. Okay? So man's pride has to be lowered. Again, that's Isaiah chapter 2, verses 9, 11 and 17. So, May the 11th, 1903, I have a VIP on this one as well. Peace puts passions in their place, and the upright intention sanctifies everything. Louisa said, as I was in my usual state, I saw my adorable Jesus for just a little. And he said to me, peace. Now, one of the things that the Lord it talks a lot about in these writings is peace, because as you know, the angels proclaimed him the Prince of Peace on the day he was born. And he, in order to be able to reign in us, we have to have peace. And so you will hear a lot about peace in these writings. Peace puts passions in their place. That means all our emotions that can get out of order by the slightest stimulation, they will be kept pacified or in their place. And so when things happen to us or are said to us, we can deal with them. Peace puts all passions in their place, and what triumphs over everything establishes all good in the soul and sanctifies everything is to do everything for God. Excuse me. In these writings, the intention is extremely important. It's not what you do, but why you do it. And so put a little heading over this, the intention. We're going to meet this over and over again. And we have already met it over and over again in the volumes that have preceded this. He tells us that we must make a specific intention for everything we think, say and do. And the only intention that's actually accepted is to do it for love of God. And if we operate for God alone, then God will have his freedom to work with us. Romans 8:29. And he will be able to make us into images of the Son. An upright working or operating is what directs, dominates and rectifies the virtues themselves and even obedience. In sum, It's like a conductor who directs the spiritual music of the soul, and then he disappeared. So notice the intention is the conductor of our own personal orchestra and makes sure that everything is done according to God's will. So May the 20th, 1903, Louisa offers her life for the church and for the triumph of truth. As I was in my usual state, Louisa said, I found myself outside of myself with Blessed Jesus in my arms. And we were in the midst of many people who with irons, swords and knives were trying to beat. Some were trying to beat, some were trying to wound, and some were trying to cut off the members of our Lord. Now, the members of our Lord, of course, means the church. Okay, so that's 1 Corinthians 12. And it will be, I think, from verse 20 onwards. So you're talking about a major persecution of the church there, which, of course, happened in the Soviet Union, where countless millions gave their lives for Christ. In fact, more martyrs died for Christ in the Soviet Union and in other places in the 20th century than in the 19 centuries added together before it. But as much as they did and tried to do, they could cause no harm because they won't prevail against the church. On the contrary, their very irons, as sharp and cutting as they were, lost all their activity and became inoperative. So here's your Isaiah 46:10 again, that she's being told ahead of time what is going to happen. Jesus and I were highly afflicted at seeing the brutality of those in human hearts, which, though they saw that they could do nothing, they would yet repeat the blows in order to succeed in their intent. In other words, they would keep at it. If you don't succeed, try again, try again, try again. And they kept pushing and pushing and pushing until they did succeed. It's quite frightening. And if they caused no harm, it was because they were not allowed. The hand of God didn't allow it until a certain point. They became angry because their weapons had become useless and they were unable to carry out their resolute will to do harm to our Lord. Of course, that means the church. And they said to themselves, why are we unable to do anything? What is the cause? Now, the thing is, they can't answer what is the cause because they have rejected God and they say God doesn't exist. So if God is the cause, then as far as they're concerned, there is no cause. It seems that at other times they were able to do something. In other words, they succeeded every now and then. But as we find ourselves in the arms of this one here, we can do nothing. So here you have Louisa's looking at this from a spiritual angle. Louisa's looking at this from a spiritual angle, and she sees that these people kind of know in their spirits that as long as Louisa is carrying out her work as victim soul, they will be blocked. Okay? And so Louisa is being given a lesson in this experience to let her know how important she is to the whole process. While they were saying this, Jesus withdrew to my side and gave them freedom to do what they wanted. But before they laid hands on me, okay, in other words, they wanted to punish Louisa for blocking them, I said, Lord, I offer my life for the church and for the triumph of the truth. Accept, I pray you, my sacrifice. And then they took a sword and they cut my head off. Now, this is happening in the spirit. This is not didn't ever happen in the flesh. OK, Blessed Jesus accepted my sacrifice. Now, notice it was beheading. But while they were doing this, in the act of making the sacrifice, to my biggest sorrow, I found myself inside of myself. I thought I had reached the place of my desires, she said, but I remained disappointed. So Louisa wants to die and go and be with the Lord. So that's 2 Corinthians 5, verses 8 to 10. 2 Corinthians 5, verses 8 to 10. I want to go and be with the Lord, but out of God's will, I have got to stay here. So June the 6th, 1903. Jesus teaches her how she must behave in the state of abandonment and of sufferings. So only the Lord can teach us how we have to behave. We just don't know. The reason why we don't know is that we only have the world out there to look at, and that's nothing. That would lead you in the opposite direction. And the church is in crisis, so we're not getting much guidance from the church either. So after going through bitter days of privations, Louisa said, and of sufferings, this morning I found myself outside of myself in an out-of-the-body experience with baby Jesus in my arms. As soon as I saw him, I said, ah, dear Jesus, how could you leave me alone? At least teach me how I must behave in this state of abandonment. The abandonment is what she usually calls her privation, that she's not seeing Jesus, and of sufferings. And he said, my daughter, offer everything you suffer in your arms, in your legs, and in your heart, together with the sufferings of my members by reciting five glory bees. Now, there is the instruction that she got. And offer it to the divine justice to satisfy for the works, the steps, and the bad desires of the hearts which creatures commit continuously. United then to my sufferings caused by the thorns and to those of my shoulders with the recitation of three glory bees. Okay. Now, the first time it was five glory bees, and this time it's three glory bees. And offer it for the satisfaction of the three powers of man, which are so disfigured that I can no longer recognize them, my image in them. And try to keep your will always united with me. That means fused, and in continuous attitude of loving me, a continuous disposition. Now, of course, just to remind you, the three powers of the soul are the intellect, the memory, and the will. And it was there where God put his image so that we would be like him. So he mentions one of them. Let your memory be the bell that rings continuously within you and reminds you of what I have done and suffered for you and of how many graces I have given to your soul so as to thank me and be grateful to me, since gratitude is the key that opens the divine treasures. Now, throughout these early volumes, 1 to 10, you get many keys given to you about how to be successful in a relationship with God. And one of them is gratitude. But you know this in ordinary relationships in family life anyway. If a person is grateful, it disposes you to do more for them. But if a person is ungrateful, it doesn't help you to be kind. So here we're told that gratitude opens the divine treasures. Let your intellect, there's the second one. Let your intellect think of nothing and occupy itself with nothing but God. There's your Deuteronomy 6, 4 to 10. Hear, O Israel, the Lord your God is one Lord, and you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul, with all your mind and with all your being. And of course, later on, they added, and your neighbour as yourself. If you do this, Jesus said, I will find again my image in you. Now, what he wants is the image that he gave to us at the very beginning. That is Genesis 1:27. Genesis 1:27 and Genesis 2:7. And I will take the satisfaction which I cannot receive from the other creatures. And you must do this continuously. In other words, once is not enough. Because we are such tiny beings that if you only do things once, how on earth could that make up for billions of others? So I want you to colour the word continuously. you must do this continuously, because if the offense is continuous, then the satisfaction must be continuous as well. Then Louisa added, Ah, Lord, how bad I have made myself. I've become even greedy. And he said, My daughter, do not fear. When a soul does everything for me, everything she takes, even refreshments themselves, I receive it as if it were refreshing my suffering body. Now, my suffering body, of course, is the church. And those who give them to her, I consider as if they were giving them to me. That's your Matthew 25:40. What you give to the least of my brethren, you give to me. Okay. So much so that if they did not give them, I would feel pain. But in order for you to remove any doubt, every time they give you some refreshment and you feel the necessity to take it, you will not only do it for me, but you will add, Lord, I intend to refresh your suffering body within mine. In other words, the intention transforms the whole thing. So while saying this, little by little, he withdrew from my interior, into my interior, because that's where the Lord dwells in us. That's 1 Corinthians 3:16. Know you not that you are the temple of the living God, and God dwells in you? He withdrew into my interior, and I could no longer see him and talk to him. I felt such pain that because of the sorrow, I would have torn myself to pieces to be able to find him again. So I began to tear the part of my interior in which he had enclosed himself, and so I found him. And with highest sorrow, I said, Ah, Lord, how can you leave me? Are you perhaps not my life, such that without you, not only the soul, but also the body is completely shattered? And it cannot bear the intensity of the pain of the privation. So what you have here is something completely different to what you and I understand about life. And that is that Louisa is not living a normal life. With the way she was living, she should have had osteoporosis, muscle wastage, bed sores, and all kinds of complications from not using the internal organs and not exercising the body and blah, blah, blah. So she is surviving in the whole of her health by a miracle. And it's only by the Lord absolutely sustaining her in this life that she can do it. So when he's not there actually doing it, she feels that she's disintegrating. And she's telling the truth. She said, this is so much so that it seems to me that I am going to die right here and now. My only and sole comfort would be death. But as I was saying this, Jesus blessed me and withdrew into my interior again. He disappeared and I found myself inside of myself. So June the 15th, 1903, how the creature can preserve the creative, redemptive and sanctifying works of God within herself. As I was in my usual state, I don't know how, I saw my adorable Jesus inside my eye. I was surprised, and he told me, My daughter, one who makes use of her senses to offend me deforms my image within herself. So my image again is Genesis 1:27 and Genesis 2:7. Therefore, sin gives death to the soul, not because she really dies, but because it gives death to everything that is divine. Because the soul is immortal, you see. If then she uses her senses to glorify me, I can say, You are my eye, my hearing, my mouth, my hands, and my feet. In other words, the Lord can really dwell in us. By this she preserves my creative work within herself. And if to glorifying me she adds suffering, satisfying and repairing for others, she preserves within herself my redemptive work. And as she perfects these works of mine within herself, my sanctifying work rises again. There are the three great fiats: creation, redemption, and sanctification. So my sanctifying work rises again, sanctifying everything and preserving it within her soul. In fact, for everything I have done in the creative, redemptive and sanctifying works or fiats, I have transfused in the soul a participation in my very operating, which of course you're going to hear more and more of as we go deeper into the divine will. However, everything is whether the soul actually corresponds to my grace. So absolutely everything is there. So we leave that there for a moment.